Are you thinking about setting off fireworks or going to a firework display in your neighbor's yard? What do you need to know about what is legal and what is not? Can you be held liable for property damage or personal injuries? With us to discuss this issue is a Naperville attorney, Colin Diamond. He's from the firm of Mathis & Schneid Injury Law. Firm concentrates in negligence cases, car accidents, wrongful death, slip and fall, nursing home neglect. And he's a friend of the show. Colin, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me again.
Oh, you're welcome, Karen. Good afternoon.
We have a bunch of issues that are kind of summertime legal issues that affect everyone. We've got dog bites, we've got bicycle accidents, we've got swimming pool liability, and I want to start with this 4th of July fireworks liability. Let's just talk a little bit about what types of fireworks are actually legal in Illinois.
Well, fireworks are legal in Illinois under the Pyrotechnic Use Act. I'm talking about Roman candles, bottle rockets, firecrackers. The items that are legal are not actually fireworks. They're considered novelty items. So we're talking about smoke bombs. We're talking about drop pops, party poppers, sparklers. Those are the items that are considered to be legal in Illinois.
So anything really significant is illegal in Illinois. Not legal, I should say, because sometimes when we say illegal, it sounds like legal. What you first stated is that those things are actually not legal, correct?
Correct.
So if you go across state lines to a place, say, where they are legal and you buy them legally in another state and you bring them into Illinois, is that still an illegal use if you use them in Illinois?
Yes. In Illinois, they are illegal. You could face a Class A misdemeanor charge punishable by a $2,500 fine or up to a $2,500 fine and up to a year in jail. And potentially, because you bought the fireworks in another state and brought them across state lines, you could be charged federally. Now, in the unlikely case that the U.S. attorney would charge you, you could face up to a year in prison.
So it's pretty serious. And my guess is that, you know, like almost anything else in the law, Colin, if you use them and no one gets hurt, maybe no one knows about it. But if someone gets hurt or there's property damage and there's a police report, then we have another situation, right? It's a little bit more scrutinized when there are issues. How common are firework injuries? Can you just kind of put that in perspective for our listeners?
Yeah, well, in 2024, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission drafted a report, and they determined that about 10,000 injuries occur annually in the U.S., especially around the 4th of July. Now, mainly, we're talking about burns and hand injuries. In terms of Illinois itself, in 2021, there were about 200 firework-related injuries in Illinois, including one death.
And, you know, I have known people who have been injured badly, scarred for life, lost an eye, lost a hand. These are significant injuries in some cases. So I think it's really important for people to know if you're going to be setting these things off illegally, probably, unless they're, like you say, some sort of novelty item, that this is a very serious problem. If let's just say that you have some illegal fireworks, you're setting them off in your yard, one of them goes into the neighbor's yard and hurts somebody, what can that person sue you for, and what kind of damages, what kind of recovery could that person get?
Well, they could sue you personally. You would have to check your homeowner's insurance policy. They could make a claim against your homeowner's insurance policy, but the policy itself you have to look at. Sometimes the policies will have exclusions for illegal acts. So the insurance company could argue, hey, this is an illegal act, and then you could be the one on the hook. So you might want to, you know, get an umbrella policy as well to kind of protect you there. But yeah, they could sue you for any kind of injuries that they sustained. So, you know, any medical bills associated with any burns that they may have, any lost wages they have that has caused them to be out of work for a long time, disfigurement, if they had any scars as a result of that, pain and suffering for the amount of time that they had to go through this with this severe burn, loss of a normal life and emotional distress as well. They could all make claims under those categories for and injuries you may have caused them.
I mean, you do injury work and you understand how these kinds of things go down. But if it's any kind of significant injury, this could easily be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? I mean, you lose a limb, you lose eyesight, you can't work, you can't, you know, you have horrible scarring and you have operations. I mean, it could be a lot of money, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
you lose an eye in one of those cases, yeah, it could be, you know, potentially millions.
Yeah. So, you know, again, if you're one of those people who likes to set off fireworks, frankly, just personally, I just never understood the thrill. But some people just, that's their deal. So, you know, I would say, you know, listen to Mr. Diamond here. Look at your homeowner's policy or ask your agent, is there an exclusion for this? Because if there is, you are doing this at your own risk and you could lose everything, including your house. And, you know, so this is a really important piece of advice. And I assume that goes for property damage too. If you set something off in your yard and it you know hits a house and it burns something and it damages it, you would also be responsible for that property damage, right?
Yes, you would be responsible for the property damage. There might be a little bit of a blurry line there because a lot of homeowners' policies will cover fire damage. So you could argue, you know, hey, this was a fire that was started by my neighbor. And again, you have to look at any exclusions in the policy. But yeah, you could be on the hook for the extensive property damage as well.
Let's talk about an umbrella policy. I talk about that quite a bit. I'm not a personal injury lawyer, but I know how important an umbrella policy is. And can you explain just basically what that is? Like our average person, maybe they have homeowners insurance or renters insurance, and they have car insurance, and then you get an umbrella. Colin, can you explain what that covers and what that protects?
Yes. So an umbrella is above and beyond what your normal policy limits are for your insurance policy. So let's say you have a car, and most people on average will have about $100,000 liability limits or for injury protection. So, but let's say you get in a horrific crash and you injure the other person, and their medical bills alone are, you know, $500,000. So the insurance company may state, hey, we're going to give you the $100,000. That's all we have. So, but because you have that much over, then potentially the injured party could go after you for what remains over those policy limits. And, you know, again, it's not just the medical bills there. You know, you might have disfigurement, pain and suffering, loss of a normal life. So it's good to have an umbrella policy. So if you have an umbrella policy, say, let's $1 million, that provides you additional protection in the case that your, you know, car insurance limits are only $100,000, or let's say your homeowner's insurance policy is only $300,000. But that provides you with additional coverage and protection. So you don't, in that case, you know, have to necessarily worry about them going after your personal assets because you have the umbrella policy that would cover any injuries that you cause to other people.
Last time I checked, I Googled it. Umbrella policies, I think, were like in the $350 to $400, depending, of course, on you know, your home and all the different aspects of insurance. But it's not that much money. For $1 million of coverage for $300, I mean, that's, I always say, that's Starbucks money, you know. And it's so well worth it because, again, if you have a $100,000 policy, you know, and you have any significant injuries that you caused, that could go way over that in very quick amount of time, right?
Yeah, and it's also good for you, Karen. So you might even be able to get an umbrella policy that covers you. So not only if you're responsible for injuring some other person, but let's say some other person injures you. So let's say you're out and you're driving in your car, and unfortunately some guy who's got 3 DUIs and a suspended license for however long, no insurance, hits you, you're in a fiery wreck, and in that case, your umbrella policy may help cover any expenses that you have in that case. So it could also provide protection to you. So it's always good to have, A, if you're, you know, happen to injure somebody else in a horrific manner, but also some umbrella policies may cover you as well. But again, you have to discuss that with your insurance agent and, you know, look at the policy itself.
Absolutely. And if anybody gets anything from this today and remembers anything, call your agent on Monday and ask about an umbrella policy. We're talking to Colin Diamond. He's with Mathis and Schneid. They're in Naperville. Colin, thank you so much for joining us. When we on break, I had a texter who said, what if I'm a military vet and the setting off of fireworks next door causes me to have PTSD and I have to go to the hospital? What do you think of that kind of case? Is there a case for this gentleman?
Yes. Yes. PTSD is actionable. So it also includes mental health injuries that are caused by fireworks. So, yes, you could potentially have a claim.
Interesting. And I suppose if you have those issues, you'd be nice to go over and walk over to the neighbor's house and tell them that so that maybe they would do it elsewhere or not do it at all. Let's talk about swimming pools. You know, swimming pools are wonderful, but they have a whole host of issues when it comes to liabilities. What are some of the things that people with swimming pools should be thinking about, Colin?
Well, in particular, swimming pools are considered to be an attractive nuisance. So if you have kids in the neighborhood and, let's say, a child walks into your backyard, falls into the pool, and drowns, you could be held liable for that, even if the kid's a trespasser. So if it's an adult who's trespassing and jumps into the pool and gets hurt, then typically you do not have a duty of care toward trespassers. But if it's just a child, yes, it's another story.
So the idea when you say attractive nuisance is that because you have something that is so compelling for kids to get up to no good, even if they are actually violating and trespassing, violating the law and trespassing, you still could be held liable, right? So you need to protect yourself and your swimming pool and others for the illegal acts of kids who might be attracted to that nuisance.
Correct.
So what else are some things that you can do to protect yourself if you have a swimming pool?
Well, if you have a swimming pool, you should have a lock and gate. I think that would be most helpful. You should have signs warning about the pool, you know, on the side, how you have different signs indicating the depth of the pool. Okay, this is 8 feet, 5 feet, 3 feet. You should also have signs that say, you know, no diving, stuff like that. You should have pool covers, alarms potentially. So, you know, if a kid opens the back fence and triggers the alarm, it goes off. If the kid gets scared away, again, you know, good homeowner's insurance and umbrella policy would be helpful in that situation as well to protect you just in case that issue happens.
And I'll throw a few more in there, having had a swimming pool in my life, you know, is to make sure your fence around the pool meets with the required, height of your municipality to make sure you're in compliance with the law. And, you know, the more you can cover up and hide your swimming pool, not only does that help you from a liability standpoint, but it does prevent people from trespassing and doing something that might harm themselves. So again, you're seeing all kinds of issues with regard to swimming pool. I know there's now this new thing. It's sort of like our Airbnb where you can actually rent out of somebody else's swimming pool and throw a party. I guess I have one question here, Colin. Let's say you're throwing a pool party, whether it's your house or someone else's house. What are some things you can do to protect yourself? I mean, is it the right thing to do to hire a lifeguard, or does that then create a duty to have somebody who's going to be monitoring the swimming pool? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think you owe a duty in terms of the management and control of your property. So you owe a duty of care to the guests that come over to your house if you're hosting a party. So yes, that could be something as simple as, you know, being vigilant, having those signs again that tells the guests there, hey, listen, you know, this pool, you know, no diving, anything like that, no horseplay around the pool. You know, you could hire a lifeguard, you know, to be there. But if you just have enough adults who are, you know, watching the pool, making sure that, you know, nobody's getting out of control, and potentially you could have life jackets and stuff like that, make sure that the kids or the people there know how to swim. Also, if you're older, make sure that people aren't imbibing too much and going in the water, because alcohol and water don't necessarily mix. So just those are some of the precautions that you can take.
And here's it's a really complicated issue probably, but just give us the general idea on waivers. So let's say you're having a pool party and the children and adults are invited. What if you had a quick little piece of paper that said to the adults, I am responsible for my child can swim, I am the one who's going to be supervising it, and I am like waiving all liability against homeowner?
Well, liability waivers don't apply to children. So they've had this in terms of trampoline parks. So they'll require children to sign off or have an adult sign off for their kid to go to a trampoline park, or if they go to one of these ninja gyms or something like that and the kid gets injured. So the kids cannot be waived in that regard. Yes, it would be good to have, if it's an adult that's coming there, like let's say it's an Airbnb for pool and it's adults, and yes, you can require a waiver there, but, you know, there may still be, you know, doesn't necessarily mean just because there's a waiver that they wouldn't necessarily bring a lawsuit against you.
Right. Let's switch gears, literally, to I read that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reports there are more auto accidents during summer months than any other time of year, which really surprises me because I would think that it would be winter, you know, with the snow and the ice, but maybe it's because more young people are on the road? I don't know. But in any event, let's talk a little bit about car accidents, because they are common. And when it happens, it's a sudden thing. It's nothing you can prepare for. But maybe just talking this through will be important for people. So you're in a car accident. You're driving down the street. You get in a car accident. What are some things to keep in mind after you're in this accident?
Well, collision, be sure. First of all, I'd say dial 911, get the police there, have a report drafted, take pictures of the property damage involved and any injuries that you may have, exchange insurance information, and if you have a dash cam like I do, preserve that video, because that could be helpful in terms of, you know, determining who's at fault in the collision. I've had a few cases where the dash cam, initially, my clients received a ticket for traffic, for violating a traffic law, but then the video said otherwise, and that traffic ticket was dismissed. I would call an attorney as soon as possible as well. And if you are injured, obviously seek medical treatment as soon as possible. Even if you're on the fence and you don't know, you're unsure, it's better to be safe than sorry, and I would go seek medical treatment immediately.
You know, and one of the things that I have seen over the years, even though I don't do this kind of work, I'm sure you have, Colin, is that, you know, your adrenaline is going when you're in an accident. And sometimes you don't realize that you're injured. And the next day you wake up and your back hurts and your neck hurts. And, you know, it's a joke. And, you know, you see jokes about this all the time. But it's a real thing. And whiplash is a real thing. So I definitely think going to the hospital, you know, is a good idea just to get checked out and to certify and to kind of memorialize what happened. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I can't afford a lawyer. But tell us why you don't need to afford a lawyer in a personal injury case.
Well, personal injury attorneys work on what's called a contingency fee. So we only get paid if there's a settlement or a jury verdict for the client. And then all costs will be taken out of the settlement or jury verdict at the end of the case. If we lose, if we don't prevail, then you don't pay us anything. And that includes any costs that we might accumulate throughout the prosecution of the case. So it's a win-win for the client. Basically, the main thing is, the main goal is that the client recovers from his or her injuries. So while they recover, we handle all the insurance business and deal with all of that. So that's how we work as personal injury attorneys.
And, you know, I get asked this question a lot, which is, we only just have a minute left, but is that, you know, at what point do you need a lawyer? I mean, what if I just, you know, the insurance company calls and they want to write me a check? And I always say that, you know, you might want to do that if you don't have injuries or you have minor damage. But if you have anything significant, it's really important. You're going to do better hiring a lawyer, because what if, and this happens all the time, I see this. It's like, I'm okay, I'm really fine, and they accept a check, right? And then a couple months later, they're like, oh, I've got to have my knee replaced, or I have to have some physical therapy. And now you can't go back and recover because you already settled. So it's important to get all of that taken care of up front, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So it, you know, could you handle it on your own? Sure, but it would be wise to consult with an expert or consult with an attorney who knows this field of law. Just like, hey, listen, my car got in a crash. I could try and fix it on my own, but it would probably be wise if I took it to a mechanic, a guy who knows what he's doing, and a guy who does this every single day and, you know, has handled 100 different types of cars.
Let's talk about bicycle safety. I've got a couple calls here. I just got a texter who said the scooters all over. They're on the sidewalks. They're, you know, violating the traffic signals. What is the law about you are in a car and a bicycler in, you know, violates the law, goes through a red light? Are you liable? Are you not liable?
So under Illinois law, bicycle riders and scooter riders must adhere to the Illinois traffic code. So you are still held to the same standards just as someone who is driving a car. So let's say it's a biker and they're riding their bike, they blow a stop sign, and then you hit the biker. There is a chance that that biker's recovery would be barred if they're found to be more than 50% at fault. So if you were the driving your car and you didn't have a stop sign or a stoplight, and you're driving and this guy blows the stop sign, goes right in front of you and gets hit, there's a chance that his recovery would be barred.
Now, that doesn't mean that you won't get sued. I mean, you know, and if you're sued, you still have to defend, and your insurance would cover that, of course. So one of the things that I always say to people is, you know, is you have to be careful of the bicycle riders. First of all, you don't want to hurt anyone. I mean, God knows you don't want to hurt anyone. Of course, of course. But if you're really thinking about the law and your liability, even if they are in the wrong, and you know what? Sometimes they are, right? Sometimes they don't act as if they are bound by the laws, the rules of the road. And maybe they don't even know them. You know, I don't think you need to be a licensed driver to get on a scooter necessarily. So the idea is that you want to avoid accidents and you want to be really on the lookout for these people, even if you're not going to be held liable. One of the things that I had a texter, Judy, and this goes back to umbrella policy, Colin. She said you said it was cheap. She said in last year, an umbrella policy with Allstate was $323. Now it's $542. It's not cheap anymore. But I will tell you, Judy, thank you so much. You sent that to me on Facebook. I will still say that that's cheap, that a $500 premium for a year to cover you over and above your car insurance and your homeowner's insurance is money well spent. Are you in agreement on that one, Colin?
That's 100% true, Karen. You get what you pay for. That's how it is in life. And
yeah,
some things are going to cost money, but at the end of the day, let's say you pay that $500, nothing ever happens to you. Well, that's great, but you always had that protection. But let's say you paid that $500 and then you get in a horrific collision, and the other person doesn't have adequate insurance, and that umbrella would cover you. Or let's say you hurt somebody else in a tragic manner, then that would step in and provide you with additional protection, and you wouldn't have to auction off your house and stuff to pay for the cost of the injured party.
I really think it just lets you sleep well at night to know that you have that extra coverage for really not something that's going to break your bank. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Ruth, who said she has a personal injury case. Hi, Ruth. Welcome to WGN. You're talking to me, Karen Conti, and to Colin Diamond. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much, and to your attorney for volunteering his services. We often say thank you to the servicemen for what they serve, but I feel like people in jurisprudence are serving us also in a tremendous way. So my statement is that I had got put into a nursing home without my approval, and that also, but also it came from a hospital visit. And while I was in the nursing home, I was put in a lockdown ward, an Alzheimer's ward. And when I got there on the first couple of days, I thought it was mentally ill something because people weren't answering any questions I asked. And then I would get odd looks from the care assistants when I would take my tray off of the food cart. They thought it was odd that I didn't wait for, you know, someone to deliver it to the room. And there just were different things that were just not on the up and up. One person said to me, oh, you have a phone. And I thought, well, what's the reason why I can't have a phone?
Okay,
so
Ruth,
the ward is locked down.
So let me ask you.
I
just wanted, you're talking about a personal injury. That's what this little thing says here. Did you get injured when you were at the nursing home?
Oh, it was very slight. I don't think that would constitute anything but frivolous. Someone pushed me down on the toilet seat, but when I was getting up,
okay,
and doing it on my own. No, my thing is the anxiety and the stress and the trauma that I no longer want to go to a physician, or worst of all, I can no. After a week and a half, I came home. I couldn't walk.
Okay,
and I haven't been able to do that since. The
okay.
Stress and anxiety.
I understand.
Of that circumstance. I don't want to go to a nursing home, and I can't walk. I can't get up to get into a wheelchair.
Okay, Ruth, let's just put you on hold for a minute. So let's talk about, just really briefly before we take a break, Colin, nursing home liability. I mean, what Ruth is talking about sounds to me like she is traumatized a little bit by being there. She didn't want to be there. This is an all-new foreign situation for her. My heart goes out to her. But that's not something that's actionable in the court of law, right? So, but I do want you to mention nursing home liability and what needs to happen in order for there to be an action that you would have against a nursing home.
Especially in Illinois, you can bring a case against a nursing home pursuant to the Nursing Home Care Act. And what you need to show in that act is that they had a duty of care to you, they breached that duty, and as a result of that breach, they caused you injury, and you sustained damages as a result. So to give an example of, you had a family member that was in a nursing home, and they were required to be watched and assisted with walking, you know, from their bed to the bathroom or from the bed to the dining room, stuff like that, and they fall. Then the nursing home could be held liable if they fail to assist them or they fail to monitor them, or potentially if, you know, your family member was trying to get out of bed and they didn't respond to the call light. They could be held responsible if there was a fall and your family member was then injured, you know, fractured hip, broken wrist, and then they had to, you know, they're responsible for the damages after that. So did your family member need to go to the hospital? Did they need surgery? So in cases like that, they could be held liable. Also, if they didn't provide necessary care. So if they didn't have a plan of care to address, you know, the deterioration of your, you know, family member, if they're, you know, were not being provided proper nutrition, you know, hydration, stuff like that, that could be held responsible. So that would be neglect.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to, you know, take it on the other side. I mean, you are a lawyer who sees things that go wrong, and you bring these lawsuits, and you try to get recoveries for your clients. But let's talk a little bit about nursing home liability, and maybe what are some of the things you can do as a family member to kind of prevent some of these things from happening in the first place, having seen what goes wrong in these assisted facilities. Colin, thank you so much for hanging with us. And we talked to Ruth, who had some issues with her nursing home that seemed to be her adjustment there. But let's talk a little bit about, a lot of us have friends, family, or maybe you are in an assisted care facility or a nursing home. What are some of the things that you can do to protect yourself from liability, from negligence or from bad care?
In terms of if you are working at the facility?
No, if you have a loved one. I mean, you know, obviously being there and making sure your loved one is okay is something that you should be doing. But are there any tips that you have for people to not, you know, have something bad happen to them in one of these facilities?
Yeah, I the main thing is obviously do do your research before you put a loved one into a facility. You know, look at the facility, look at their ratings. You know, you can look on the Illinois Department of Public Health. We'll have, like, can look whether or not this facility has had violations before. You can determine whether or not this would be the right place for your loved one to be at. Every time that your loved one is admitted to a nursing home or assisted living, that they have to do an intake form that will list, you know, all of the issues that the resident has, you know, their weight, their height at the time, but also, hey, are they a fall risk? Are they able to walk? Things like that. And you can always, you know, check in on your loved one to make sure that they are being taken care of. I mean, sometimes if your loved one is able to communicate with you, they can tell you, hey, I've been left alone a long time, or, you know, I haven't, you know, they don't have adequate staff to come and treat me when I need to, you know, get up out of bed and go to the bathroom. You know, or maybe they're not getting the proper nutrition they need. Maybe they have trouble eating and they need, you know, to drink, you know, Ensure shakes or something like that, and they're not getting that. So, you know, just to follow up with that, and then you could always, if it gets really bad, you know, if there's a fall or you know, you suspect that your loved one might have neglect, you can actually request an investigation from the Department of Public Health.
And, you know, one of the things, too, and I suppose this goes for hospitals as well, is, you know, making yourself present. And, you know, if you've got a loved one in the hospital, to know who the nurses are and the different shifts, know their name, be friendly with them, you know, keep the door open. Here's my phone number in case you need something. How's she doing today? And when you, I feel like sometimes when you have that personal interaction with the people who work there, they you know, not to say they're not going to do a good job anyway, but I think that personal interaction makes them understand that there's somebody who cares about the patient, and maybe there is going to be a little bit better care given, and at least some communication if something goes wrong. You probably have seen that over and over again, right? You know, in your business, right?
Oh, 100%. If they have family members that are there, that are, you know, speaking with the treatment providers are going to know, hey, we gotta watch over this person, you know, extra carefully. If they don't, unfortunately, it is true, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So if the resident doesn't have family members checking in or calling in on a regular basis, then, you know, they might not, you know, some people might not be attuned to their needs.
Absolutely.
They would be if hey, you know, his son is going to be calling, you know, every day, or he's going to be stopping by at least a couple times a week to check in on him. So we better do good work.
A little bit of a squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing. So
absolutely.
So if anyone has any questions for Colin about, we're talking about liability from fireworks, nursing home liability, car accidents, bicycle accidents, those types of things. If you have a question or something happened to that you're wondering about, give us a call here, 312-981-7200, or text me at that same number, 312-981-7200. We're still going to be talking about all these issues. It looks like we got some callers calling in, but let's talk about dog bites. June is National Dog Bite Awareness Month. Who knew? What is the liability if your dog bites somebody, Colin?
So you can be held liable under two different areas or theories. So one is a negligence theory. So you, as the owner of the property, the dog in this case, have the duty to exercise due and reasonable care in the management of your property, your dog. So if your dog injures another person, you could be held liable under the negligence theory. Also, they have the Animal Control Act. So what that requires is four different things. So if your dog or other animal injures another person, the four things are your animal owned by you injured another person. That's one. Number two, there was a lack of provocation. Three, that you were peaceably conducting yourself. And four, the person who was injured had was in a place where they had the right to be. So under those two different things, yes, you could be held liable if your dog bites another person.
So let's talk about that. You know, you're in a place where you have a right to be. So if someone's trespassing on your property and goes into your fenced area and your dog's there and bites somebody, that would be a defense to liability under that law, correct?
Correct.
And then lack of provocation. What is provocation when it comes to a dog bite?
Well, provocation can be intentional or it can be unintentional. So three different cases which give you kind of an idea of it. So there was a 2.5-year-old girl who pulled a dog's tail while it was chewing on a bone, and the dog scratched her. That was found. That girl was found to have provoked that dog. Another one where there was, if you are interfering with, if the dog's eating or trying to eat, and you pull the food away, and potentially yes, that could be provocation. Or if you hit the dog. There was another case where a 3-year-old kicked a dog in the stomach, or the dog just had surgery. That was held to be provocation. So those are kind of examples of provocation.
So that would be a defense to your dog bite case. But I will say, you know, and I see a lot of this in the city where I live, where you have high rises and a lot of dogs are in the elevators in small spaces. And, you know, a lot of people reach out to pet the dog, and not every dog reacts well to that. And I think it's important to also make sure your insurance policy covers dog bites. Do insurance policies generally cover dog bite liability, Colin?
They do, but first of all, you have to tell. I mean, you just mentioned high rises, all right? So you will need renter's insurance. You'll need renter's insurance in order to cover that, but you also need to tell the insurance company that you bought a dog. Because they could say, hey, well, we didn't know you had a dog, so we're going to deny coverage in this case. Also, your insurance coverage may be denied if your insurance company, you know, told you, hey, we realize you had a dog and your dog attacked somebody else. We're not going to cover you if you keep a dog. So, if the person continues to have a dog, even after your insurance company says, we're not going to cover you unless you get rid of the dog, then again, you could be on the hook for that.
And, you know, there are other issues when there's a dog. I mean, there's reporting requirements, and in some cases, the dog has to be taken in and kept under observation. So it's a very serious thing to have a dog. And if your dog even has any potential for snapping at others, it's always best to be safe than sorry when it comes to these cases. And again, they can be very significant injuries. I mean, I have seen some really horrific injuries that require many surgeries and plastic surgery, and it can be something, again, that an umbrella policy is going to be very helpful to protect you, right?
Yes, absolutely. In those cases, exactly, because, you know, typically your homeowner's insurance policy might be, you know, $300,000, but if it's a true, you know, horribly inflicted injury on the person, then yes, their damages are probably going to be a lot higher than that. And an umbrella policy would kick in that case.
I just want to confirm, too, it's not just dog bites, but let's just say, and this happened to me when I used to run, it would, you know, I'd be running and a dog would come up to me and like jump on me, you know, and you know, in some cases, a dog can actually knock you down, a big dog, right? And if you get knocked down and you hurt yourself, is that also covered under this dog liability law?
Exactly. It doesn't require a bite, Karen. It requires an injury from the dog owned by the defendant. I had a case where a woman was going on a walk, and just like you, two big bulldogs came out, and she froze, and they came over, and they knocked her down, and she hit her head and had a huge gash on her head. So the owner of the dog was held to be liable in that case. And there's also another interesting case where a mail carrier tore her ACLs after a big dog charged her, and the owner was found liable there. So, no, it does not require just a dog bite. You know, it's any injury caused by the animal owned by the defendant.
We are talking to Colin Diamond. He is a lawyer in Naperville who handles negligent cases, and we're going to be taking your calls for the next half an hour. So we're opening up the phone lines. If you have a question, we like the personal injury questions, questions about bicycle liability, dog bites, swimming pools, anything that we talked about would be great. 312-981-7200, or text to that same number, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phone lines. Nick has been waiting very patiently, or at least he's been waiting. Nick, hi, welcome to WGN.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll wait patiently or whatever it takes. At the end, if it cannot get to me, I tell people, don't worry, I don't have a grudge about it.
Oh, good for you.
As you know, some people do. But I was going to ask the attorney there, and for your opinion, too. I've been retired 12 years now, and thank you. But I'm always on foot. I rarely get a ride, and I really don't want it unless there's something really big or heavy to carry. And otherwise, I just run errands by foot. You know, I not go to a bus stop and go on the bus, you know, go home or go to a store. And I'll tell you, on the sidewalks, there's an unbelievable phenomenon now. People zooming around, sometimes pretty fast, with these little scooters or sometimes these electric bikes. And is there a requirement, like, what to get one of those that's not their own personal one? They, most of these are the kind that you rent, you use, and then you leave it wherever you finish your trip, and then you check out of it with your credit card or debit card or whatever they call it. You know,
divvy, yes.
Yeah, so is there a requirement that these people have to have, like, I think when you rent a car, you got to have at least a certain amount of insurance that you take also. Is there a requirement? Because that might help them to be more responsible, because if there's a claim, then that'll be recorded somewhere. You know, right now, I don't know what, if they just say, well, I got no money. Yeah, I hit that little old lady coming out of the store.
Okay, all right. Nick, let's put you on hold, and let's see. Colin, so the question is, do you know if there is any requirement that you have to have any insurance or anything in particular to rent a divvy or one of those rental scooters or bikes?
I don't believe there's a requirement now. Obviously, you would look to see if that person, so it's a motorized scooter, or if the divvy's motorized, then that's considered to be a motorized vehicle. So their car insurance may kick in if they have that. I don't know necessarily if they're required to have a certain, in Illinois, the limits for car insurance are $25,000 in coverage. So they may have that to apply, but I don't know if they are required at this time to have insurance if they ride those divvies themselves. The divvy company may have coverage, but that is something you have to look into.
Let's talk about, if you are a pedestrian, we've got a couple of texters, one from 773. It says, what are the rights of pedestrians versus bikes and scooters when you're on a sidewalk? We're seeing that quite a bit in downtown Chicago, where you see scooters and bikes sometimes up on the sidewalks and you're trying to avoid getting hit. What would happen if a pedestrian were hit by a scooter or a bike on the sidewalk?
So, as far as I know, bikes and scooters are not allowed on the sidewalks in Chicago, especially the motorized ones. So if you get hit by one of them, then yes, their insurance may apply. If they have auto insurance or if they have an umbrella coverage, or that may apply in that situation. If you are a pedestrian and you get hit, and they don't have coverage, then your own insurance may kick in if you have underinsured motorist coverage from your own auto policy. So that may come in and provide you with additional protection.
And I will say that if you are a bike rider or a scooter rider, you should definitely make sure that you are insured. I had a situation where an employee of mine was riding her bicycle on the trail, you know, along the lake in Chicago, and someone stopped short right in front of her. She crashed into the guy, did serious damage to him. He almost died. And, you know, the question was whether or not she had insurance to cover it, because you just don't know. You're in kind of Neverland. You're not driving a car. And does your homeowner's insurance cover it? And in her case, the homeowner's insurance did cover it. But again, I don't think it was a given. So if you are a person who rides a bike, make sure you know if your insurance covers liability that you may have. Let's talk to Kent on line 3. Hi, Kent. Welcome to WGN. Thank you for holding.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Conte, and thank you, Mr. Diamond. Appreciate you taking the call here.
Sure.
Listen to all this. I mean, it just sounds like there's so much risk out there. And I guess my question is, you know, what kind of steps can we take to minimize that to the extent possible, you know, other than just never get out of bed and leaving the house there?
That's right.
I mean, do you have any tips? Like, you know, you have your homeowners, your auto, you know, the umbrella or excess liability. I mean, is there any way to try and coordinate these things to just, you know, maximize to the extent possible? I mean, what sort of tips might you have there?
That's a good question, and that's a broader question too, because lawsuits are going to be out there, right? No matter what you do or how careful you are, if you get sued, you want to make sure you're protected. What are some of your tips, Colin, for Kent here?
Well, I would just make sure you have adequate insurance. I would talk to your insurance agent. You know, I would talk to your financial advisor if you have that as well. Just make sure you have adequate coverage on your homeowner's policy, your renter's policy, your auto policy, or if you have an umbrella policy. No, you don't need to wrap yourself up in bubble tape and when you walk outside every single day. But you also need to make sure that, you know, in addition to being careful when you're driving your car or when you, if you have a dog or if you, you know, are playing with fireworks on the 4th of July, you need to make sure you have additional coverage just in case something happens and someone else gets injured as a result of your conduct.
I'll add a few more things to that, and I don't know if you're going to concur, Colin, but, you know, make sure you've got good insurance because you don't want to go for that substandard, crummy insurance that's the lowest premium ever. Go with a reputable company that's rated well. Why? Because, you know what, you could pay insurance premiums the rest of your life and never have a claim, and that's good. But if you have a claim and you need to make a claim and you want good people to come in there and know that that's their obligation and not deny coverage, to appoint you good lawyers to represent you, to make sure that there's no excess liability, that your insurance covers all of your liability, because some insurance carriers are just not up to par. I mean, you've seen that, I'm sure, Colin, right?
Oh, 100%. Again, it goes back to you get what you pay for. So you may be paying a really, really low price for your insurance, but at the end of the day, A, they could look, you know, they didn't get rich and you know, have the names on the side of stadiums or sponsoring the Sugar Bowl by writing a bunch of checks. So if you go with a low-budget carrier that doesn't have a good reputation, then it's possible they could try and deny coverage, or they may just leave you in a lurch and you might be waiting years and hopefully your case gets resolved. But they might not necessarily provide the best defense to you if you are in a situation like this where your conduct injures another person.
I would also add maybe to it, if you have, you know, if you have assets to protect, or even if you don't, is to do some sort of trust plan. Trust, you know, so if you have a house, you might want to put the house in trust. And this, for this, you would have to consult with someone besides Colin or myself. You would go to an estate planning lawyer who's competent to protect assets. And so, you know, even your business, if you're driving for business and you get in an accident, your business could be sued. Make sure that you're incorporated or that you're in an LLC. Make sure that you're conducting your business as a business and you're not taking money out of your business for personal reasons, because then someone could break through that corporate shell and that corporate barrier. So again, good estate planning, incorporation, making sure that if someone does sue you, that maybe your assets are protected. We have a bunch of calls. We've got Kelly on a dog bite insurance issue. We've got all kinds of questions and texts. But when we come back, we'll finish up with Colin Diamond. He is a negligence lawyer in Naperville. Let's go to Kelly, who's been waiting. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show. You have a question about dog insurance, dog and homeowners insurance.
Yes, I do have a question. I'm a homeowner, and I have had I do have State Farm insurance. I've been here in my home for 20 years. And I inherited a dog that I do believe is a pit bull, and I have not told State Farm about it because I don't think it's included on their policy. And I'm wondering if there's something additional I can do. Will the umbrella policy cover that, or what do I need to do?
Yeah, I would get an umbrella policy, Kelly. I would notify State Farm. I know, unfortunately, some breeds of dogs might not be covered. I don't know. Pit bulls, but I would look at your policy as well to see if they do have coverage for dogs. You might be okay, but I would let State Farm know. But I do believe an umbrella policy would protect you, though, but you would need to tell the insurer for the umbrella policy that you do have a pit bull.
Thank you for the call, Kelly. Thank you so much. Linda, let's go to Linda. Hi, Linda. Welcome to WGN. You have a question regarding nursing home liability.
I do. Thank you so very much for taking my call. Right now, the administrator at this nursing home, he wants information about my mother's income. My mother is very, very elderly and doesn't work. She's never had to work. But my dad had her in his, what do you call it, pension or, oh, Social Security. But I don't know what's going on now that they say they would need to have some information so that she can pay the nursing home. The nursing home, along with the hospital, are responsible for my mother having, they call them wounds, but we used to call them bed sores, and which has extended her stay in this particular nursing home. And I need to know, what all do I have to show them? My brother sent me information
okay.
of payments, but they said they could see that on that, whatever I gave them, it says it is, it goes to a...
Okay, Linda, hold on. Yeah. We're getting real detailed, and so we're not really equipped for this. And I'm not even sure that we are equipped to talk about nursing home and the contractual relationship. But thank you. If you want to email me at the office at WGN@AskKarenConti.com, perhaps I can give you somebody who can answer that. I don't know, Colin, if that's something that's probably out of your wheelhouse.
It's out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you might want to talk to a contract attorney, Linda, in terms of the payment that's needed to take care of your mother.
And there is, there are elder law lawyers who deal with these issues every day. And my guess is, just from dealing with these issues just a slight bit, is that you are responsible for giving them information as to your mother's finances if there is state funding, you know, because they want to make sure that your mother doesn't have the assets to pay if they're using state funds to support her. Again, that's not an answer to your question, but definitely send me an email at WGN@AskKarenConti.com, and I can refer you to an elder law lawyer. In fact, we've had a few of them on the show who have been very, very good at answering these types of questions. I got an interesting text just a few minutes ago. Last week, I witnessed an accident in downtown Chicago where a car hit a biker. The biker was at fault and was violating the traffic light. I gave my card to the driver of the car. Could I be a potential witness? My wife said this is going to get me involved in a way that might be really time-consuming. Can I back out? So if you are a witness to an accident and the parties know who you are, what could happen to you, and what could your involvement be, Colin?
Well, you could potentially be subpoenaed to testify about what happened. The police could call you if they're investigating the crash and ask for you to give a statement about what happened. You may refuse to testify, but again, you might be held in contempt for, ignoring a subpoena at that point. But at the end of the day, if you did witness it, and do testify and, testify as to the fault, you may help potentially to resolve the case. But you never know. You never know at this point. It could never go to court. But it's certainly, if you're a witness and the police are investigating, it's possible that they may contact you.
And I'm going to add something to this, which is a little off the topic. But if you receive a subpoena ever, whether it's because you work at a company and somebody's suing and you're a coworker, or whether you're a witness to an accident or anything for that matter, you never, ever ignore a subpoena. And if it's a valid subpoena, it's hard to tell if you've never seen one before, but there's some ways to look at it. And maybe you give Karen a call and you send it to me and I'll take a look at it to see if it's valid. But you never want to ignore it, because a subpoena is issued by the court and it means that you are compelled. You are absolutely compelled to show up in court or at a deposition or wherever it says, and you have to do that. And I get asked this a lot. I'm sure you do too, Colin. But let's just say you're on vacation during the time that you're supposed to be in court or at a deposition. You should call up the person whose name is on the subpoena, who's the lawyer who issued the subpoena. And you should say, hey, listen, I'm on vacation. Here's my tickets. I can't show up. And they're probably be very willing to change that date to accommodate you if you're important for the resolution of that case. But ignoring a subpoena, ignoring a jury summons, ignoring anything from a court is never, never a good idea.
No, it isn't. especially jury duty. If you get called for jury duty, you're going to want to show up for that as well.
Absolutely. You can be held in contempt, and you don't want to be held in contempt. I just got two texts, one from a State Farm agent in Chicago. We do not have specific dog breed exclusions. Do highly recommend an umbrella policy. Thank you, 630 area code. And then I have a 708 text. It says, the state of Illinois does not allow insurance companies to exclude dogs from coverage under a homeowner's policy. I'm an insurance agent. You know what? I never heard that before. And if that's the case, that might be news to me, because I remember that there were times when dogs could be excluded. So maybe that's changed.
And maybe that's changed. I actually had a specific case where the homeowner had a dog that bit one of my clients, and then I got another person who called in, and same neighborhood, and this was a year or two later, bit by the same dog, and the same insurance company said that they were denying coverage because that dog had bitten someone else before, and they had required her to get rid of the dog in order to be covered. So,
yeah, interesting. But I'm going to look into that, and maybe on our next show. And it's not that I don't believe you, 630 area code, but I want to make sure that that is the case. Karen, if you're a Republican member of Congress or the Senate, of course, you could ignore a subpoena and get away with it. Oh, a little politics there. Yes, we try to stay out of politics here on the Karen Conti Show. We're just in the legal lane, right, Colin? We're just going to stay right in that legal lane and explain the law and not comment on the politics. There's no good that comes from that, in my view. I had a texter who said, I was just in a car accident, and when the driver who hit me got out of the car, he offered to pay the damage without his insurance company being involved. Is that a good idea? Would I have to report it to my insurer? And I'm going to assume from this texter that there were no personal injuries, but, you know, because if there were personal injuries, obviously that's not a good idea. But what if it's just minor property damage?
Well, you know, it's always a risk you take. So you don't know. They may offer to pay, but you don't know the extent of the damage. You may not have a lot of visible property damage to your car, but let's say you take it to your mechanic and there's a lot of damage underneath, and it's going to run you, a couple thousand dollars to get it fixed. You know, the person may offer to pay that, but they may not. So, if you go and you go to the auto body shop or the mechanic and you get an estimate, say, hey, give it to the other guy and see if they pay it. They may pay it. But, at the end of the day, it's always best to, report it to your insurance company at the very least. And they can, if you have collision coverage, your own insurance company can take care of the damage, and then they can pursue the other driver's insurance company. I'd be wary of trusting someone who's making you an offer on the road to pay for it. You never know if they're going to do that, and they may run off. And so it's good to get their contact information and your insurance information.
So let's switch gears a little bit, and let's say this is one more dog issue here. I have a rescue dog who will snap at people he doesn't know. When we walk, I usually have a muzzle on him, but sometimes I take it off at the dog park. I tell people not to pet him, but sometimes they do. Would I be liable if he bites somebody? I mean, I think we've discussed that, but can you just address that again?
Okay, so she has a muzzle for her dog.
Yes.
There are a couple of circumstances. Is she required to have a muzzle for the dog, or she just has it, for the dog? It's good that she has a muzzle if her dog just has a tendency to snap at people. Petting itself is not considered to be provocation. So petting or greeting a dog is not considered to be provocation. But in terms of if she's going to the dog park and wants to have her dog without the muzzle on, I just take precaution, because if the dog goes out and bites somebody, you could be held liable. Or if the dog injures someone else, you could be held liable as well. So just be careful. Maybe if your dog has that tendency, maybe don't take the dog off the leash. Keep it close by you. Just keep it away from other dogs and other people when you're there.
Colin Diamond, thank you so much for joining us. You always do a great job. Matheson Schneid, law firm in Naperville. How do people reach you if they want to talk to you about a personal injury or negligence case?
If you'd like to talk to me about a personal injury or negligence case, please feel free to give me a call at 630-428-4040. If you prefer to use email, you can reach me at my email address. That's Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at mathislaw.com. That's M-A-T-H-Y-S-L-A-W.com.
Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good rest of your summer, and keep that muzzle on your dog and keep off the sidewalks with your divvy.